Mr. Stevens ruled.
At the GHQ partisan of, at the partisan GHQ in Croatia, he was met by Ivan Rukovina, the commandant, who greeted Peters, to my intense surprise, cuddled him, kissed him, and turned out that they'd fought together in Spain, in the International Brigade. So Peter, of course, vouchsafed for Paul, said a few words on my behalf, but Dr. Vladimir Bakarich, who afterwards became the Croatian president, took me on one side and interrogated me even more strongly. He said he didn't really think that I was an agent provocateur, but they had to be extremely careful as to who came in there, you know, amongst them. What proof could I give? I said, well, if you'd like to name any message you wish, and let me use my WT set, the BBC will broadcast it any date you care to name. And he said, yes, well, fair enough. I accept that. But he said, we've got to notify Tito that you're here. We can't let you operate until he gives his consent. Anyway, we had a meal. Then we were eventually taken to a wooden cabin and to spend the night, the three of us, very rough bunks. And funny enough, in the middle of the night, I had a nightmare of explosions and flames and screaming, terrible screaming. And I woke up to find that the arsenal that they'd built, the long wooden workshop where they repaired all captured weapons, had exploded because a young lad, in preparing some anti-tank mines from captured shells that they'd taken from German defence wiring, he dropped one and exploded. He sent all the others off and the whole lot went up. All their lays, which they'd taken up very carefully, bit by bit, and reassembled up in the hills from down below, all their gear, all their equipment, all gone. And there were about 40 wounded and killed. They were screaming, young lads screaming with pain. It was a terrible, terrible experience for the first night to be there. And in brief, of course, I had to start all over again, rebuilding, taking up new lathes, new drills, new equipment. That was all in the future, of course. Anyway, the next day, I had to go around the detachment, or the GHQ, and I was amazed at what I saw. They'd got these long, big wooden huts, all built from trees felled around them. They've got a garrison of 200 troops. They've got a bakery, an agitprop department with printing presses, a hospital, concealed, camouflaged. I couldn't believe my eyes. So while I was waiting for the okay from Tito, I wrote and enciphered about a dozen messages explaining my reactions and gave a general impression of what I'd come across. That these young partisans, men and women, who after all, for the first time I'd ever seen a red star, in actual fact, they all wore these funny little hats with red stars, all very interested in the Allied effort, when we were going to start the second front, which of course I couldn't answer. Anyway, eventually after a week, Tito gave his okay, but he said that he wanted to make it quite plain that although he welcomed military missions and equipment and medical supplies, he could not agree to the British taking over as he understood they had done in Greece. Now, I included all this in my dispatches and sent them off, tapped them out, and the reply came back that do assure Tito that we are not interested, we have no wish to take over, we just want to help as an ally, maybe send a mission. And in due course, again, to cut a long story short, it was arranged that Major William Jones, DCM and Bar, Canadian, should come in with Captain John Hunter and RAF Sergeant Reffold. In due course, they arrived. About 3 weeks' time, we greeted them, took them to GHQ and so on. They made themselves known. And at the same time, I was also arranging for Tito's headquarters to accept Major Deacon, as he then become, and his mission. Now, Bill Deacon and his mission eventually dropped into Tito down, I think it was in Bosnia or Montenegro, I can't remember exactly that stage because they moved around, you know. And I think everybody knows the subsequent story, the way missions were accepted all over Yugoslavia, all over liberated territory by the partisans. Eventually, in a matter of months, we had a an order from GHQ in Cairo that Jones and I should proceed to Slovenia to join the partisan GHQ there and to blow up Zidani Most. Now, Zidani Most was a three...
Before you go on to Slovenia, if I could just interrupt you there, how much of the operations did you see in Croatia?
The partisans themselves?
Yes.
Well, I was mainly confined to the GHQ because they... following the unhappy experience of Atherton, who they said passed through their lines and was then escorted by them as far as the extent of their liberated territory, where he was murdered, they always have claimed, by Mihailovic's men and his sergeant, and his money taken from him.
Do you think that did happen?
Oh, I'm sure, because they said that, you know, they had nothing to gain. All they wanted was Allied recognition. And Atherton, like Huston, had passed through their midst, either the GHQ there or the one down with Tito. He'd explained his mission, that he had to go to Mihailovic, and they'd let him go further on with an escort, after which, of course, he was on his own.
Did you ask to be able to leave the headquarters?
Well, they didn't encourage it, because they were frightened. If anything happened to me, they would also be accused of having murdered me. Whereas actually I did slip out every so often with the patrols, quite unauthorised. They were rather angry when they found out.
How did you manage to do that?
Well, I just went with them. You know, I knew they were going. I just joined them and just slipped away with them. And of course, we got to... I was told off, of course, by them. They resented me doing it.
What did you see and do on the patrols?
Oh, nothing much. Just normal patrols. We heard some shots fired, saw the odd little group disappearing, or presumably the enemy, I never really discovered. I didn't lead a very active life in those days, not militarily. It wasn't until I joined in the raid on Pag Island at the end of the war that I was more embroiled in action.
How did the radio transmitting go?
Well, I had two sets. One I gave to... Well, I gave one to the partisans, you know, with the GHQ's permission. I didn't need two. I dropped in with a captured German bicycle had been transformed into a generator, because I had two accumulators, which they gave me a young partisan to work for me, thank God. I didn't have to do it. And, of course, I had to be economical in the use of the accumulators, because they had a limited amount of captured petrol, which later on, when they dropped a generator in, I was able to use more effectively.
So you got through...
I'm running ahead of myself, aren't I, in some ways, yeah.
You got through all right, too.
Well, I was... I got through almost immediately, and they were apparently back at base, were absolutely amazed because they'd given me up for lost. Now, unbeknown to me, an hour after my party, Fungus, went in, they dropped another party with a chap called Serdar, who claimed all sorts of peculiar things later on, that our party was supposed to contact Macek, who was the Croatian peasant leader. Now, I met Macek before the war and he was released from prison and interviewed him. But certainly I'd never had any such instructions. And I had no documentation. None of us had any documentation in our mission. Serdar claimed all sorts of peculiar things. I understood that he was very peeved that he wasn't the one chosen to lead the first mission in, which was discredited in many ways, but it is not historically accurate. Apparently, he dropped into an area where there was a lot of fighting and... had to remain for 6 months with a partisan unit that never got anywhere before he finally contacted anybody responsible, by which time, of course, we had missions all over liberated territory.
What other peculiar things did he claim?
Well, I must explain to you that I've been in a lot of contact with a chap called Nenad Gol. He's a Zagreb journalist, Croat, who was writing a complete history of the partisan movement, including a whole section devoted to the Allied effort, giving the major role to us, of course, the British, more than the Americans, and certainly more than the Russians, who really, as a matter of policy, never did anything much to help them, as you probably know. Excuse me. Where am I?
You were saying what other peculiar things that he claimed.
I've got it all written down in the thing that I wrote in Servocration to this chappy. Actually, the book never came out because they ran out of funds, and I suppose it's never been published to this day. If I could look that up sometime, I could tell you some of the things he claimed. Weird things about me, I think in particular, and also the other two. I just take it rather disappointed chap. He wanted the honour of being, to his credit, of being the first one in. I must say that, because I think it's true.
How long were you at the Croatian.
Well, I can't remember exactly, about 3 or 4 months before we got this order to proceed to Slovenia.
So this is summer 1943?
Yes, oh yes. And we joined, mind you, at GHQ we met at the adjutant Manola, I can't remember all the other names. It's all down in Bill Jones's book called 12 Months with Tito's Partisans, by the way. I could have looked that up, couldn't I? I've got it next door.
That's all right.
Anyway, he and I moved with a party that were coming back from a political meeting of the Freedom Council in I think it was Jajce, going back to Slovenia. And we had some experiences on the way. We had firing on us as we tried to cross the river. Two young partisans were drowned. They slipped off the horses, fell off the horses and were drowned, and despite all efforts to save them. Eventually we got through to another, but smaller, GHQ in Slovenia, in a place called, let me think. I've got to think. I actually dropped in. We dropped into a place called Bela Kapela in Croatia, and we went to, we weren't terribly far from Novo Mesto in Slovenia. I forgot the actual place, unfortunately. Damn it. Anyway, the same sort of setup. We were greeted there by Commandant Matija. And Boris Kidic, who was the political commissar, various other members of the GHQ staff and so on, found a very similar atmosphere as we had in Croatia.
Was there much difference between the Slovenian and the Croatian partisans?
They were much more circumscribed because of a much smaller area. And, of course, the Austro-Hungarians before the war, when they were in occupation of that part of the world, they had built beautiful mountain roads everywhere. So it was very difficult to keep out of the way of the Germans, who sent their tanks all over the place. Again, they pursued the same policy of trying to keep me pinned down. I got out occasionally, but I'm very embarrassed if I were to say
that. On patrols again?
On patrols and sometimes on my own. And because when they had liberated towns like Novo Mesto, for example, I was able to go down there and spend a week on my own. In fact, I was put up by a young lady, young wife, whose husband was away in the partisans. And because at the end of a lovely week where I had clean sheets and good food, she wouldn't accept payment, so I persuaded her to accept one of my sovereigns. Now, I have to explain that when I dropped in, I had 500 sovereigns, $2,000, $250,000 kuna, which was the currency issued by Pavelic in independent Croatia and the Ustashi under the Nazis, and I had $250,000 lira. Now the kuna and the lira all went on buying cigarettes and wine for the patrols, etc., etc. Now the partisans wouldn't take the money. They said, no, we don't need it. They wouldn't accept it from us. Eventually I said, for God's sake, put it somewhere, because I can't carry it about in a money belt all day long. It's a lot of money, you know. So they gave me a receipt for it, and until a few months later they said, look, we don't want this pay, please take it back. So I just put it in the damn cabin and left it, you know. I didn't use it. When I eventually came out, I was able to return $498 sovereigns. I had a receipt from the young wife in Novo Mesto, and a receipt from Gosniak, who became General Gosniak. I gave it to him as a souvenir, but I said, I must have a receipt to prove that I haven't taken it.
Were these gold sovereigns?
Oh, yeah, gold sovereigns. They're worth a fortune now. But, I considered that it was all the taxpayers' money. I had no right to it. I came out with nothing. All I had was a pair of Capri German binoculars and a pair of stereoscopes when I was with Mae West in the Italian front for a while afterwards. Anyway, I came out with $1,998, having signed to and given away to some Americans who were shot down and whom the partisans got back to the coast via the escape route back to Barry, as it eventually turned out to be. But when I finally got back to Barry after 16 months with the partisans, the adjutant expressed considerable surprise that he called me rather a rude name. He said to me, "Can you?" He said, "We're not on, are we?"
That's all right. People often swear.
Oh, no, he called everybody. He said, "Look at this. Look what he's brought back." I said, "It's not my money. It's, you know, British taxpayers' money." He just laughed. And he said, anyway, he said, "Where are your pips?" I said, "Pips? What bloody pips?" I was feeling a bit cheesed off because, I had to go back a bit. Bill Jones, when the Italians collapsed, he acted in a very peculiar way. The Slovenians, I will tell you, think the world of Bill Jones. because he did an awful lot for them, but he had certain ideas that I couldn't agree. He and I were at loggerheads, and he threatened to court-martial me over and over again.
In what way?
Well, I'll tell you why. When he started, the partisans, for a starter, got me an old typewriter. I said, I'm a rotten writer. They got me a typewriter up from down below, you know, one of the towns down below. And he used to sit on a rock, and he'd say, I'm sitting on a rock in the sunshine. All around me are laughing, happy partisans. You won't believe this. I couldn't believe it. That they don't swear, they don't drink, they don't have sex, and about the birds are singing. And I said, Major Jones, I said, this is a military, you know, as an ex-journalist, I said, this is a military dispatch, this is not a blasted book. Obviously, he was writing for his future book. I'll come to that in a moment. But he said, look, you know, I'm in charge here. So what I eventually did, quite illegally, I suppose, quite insubordinately, he wanted me to type out a copy of all that he'd sent. So I used to sub-edit his messages. I cut out all the guff. And then eventually I gave him his typewritten copy. Now, when eventually he got back to Cart, when they recalled him, as they did after a while, and I'll explain why in a moment, they got him back to Barry. He demanded to see the thing, and he nearly had a fit when he saw what I'd actually said. He's going to have me called Marshall again, you see. But they just dismissed the whole idea. Anyway, he went back to Canada. But before they'd taken him out, they sent in an excellent man called Peter Moore, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Moore, an engineer, who, no left-winger, but had every sympathy with somebody fighting his enemy. He was a lovely fellow, Peter Moore. He and I got on extremely well together. In fact, when we went out, when we were finally taken out on the first two planes to touch down in Slovenian territory, take off 36 stretcher wounded, and us two. When we got to Barry, and the Staff Sergeant Medicine said, Colonel, come this way, sir. And you, Sergeant, said, come with me. And Peter Moore said, this is all wrong, Alex. I said, well, never mind, Peter. It's to hell with it. It doesn't matter now. My mother died on Christmas Day in 43, so I didn't give a damn what was happening, frankly. So I went to the signal, Vittorio Mari, and he said that they'd moved to Barry in the meantime, from Cairo, of course, following the invasion of Italy. I'm chucking the gun, aren't I, a bit? I'm trying to think back, you know, over the years. Anyway, I went to the signal sergeant's mess, and the next morning I was taken to the adjutant's, in what then became DAP, I believe, if I remember right. They changed the name from MO4, because we were various missions. We were called MO4, 137, 399, all sorts of peculiar appellations. But it was DAP, I think, by the time I got to Barry. And when I saw the adjutant, whose name I just cannot remember, and he said to me, where are your pips? And I said, what do you mean, pips? And he said, well, you've been commissioned since end of December. I said, well, no, he's told me. You know, I had actually sent a signal saying, look, having completed, sounds a little bit pompous, this, having completed original mission of which volunteer, now request return to normal unit so that may qualify for commission in normal way. And I got a message back from Captain Ioannidis, Dennis Ioannidis, lovely little chap, Greek origin, but, you know, London-born like myself, who said, keep here on and doing all possible. Now, I'd no idea that I'd been commissioned. See, I'd been given the MM, I think, a couple of months after I dropped in for making the descent in plain clothes, etc., etc. Because while we were in Ljubljana, while we were in Slovenia, Jones and I both had German wanted notices put out, you know, quite a few marks offered for our capture.
How had they got this intelligence about you?
Just as the partisans had their spies right in the Gestapo headquarters in Ljubljana, so the Germans had their, they had their quislings, you see. Now, I must explain to you that when Italy collapsed, before Italy collapsed, General Ceruti, who commanded the Isonza division in that part of Slovenia, around where we were operating, he requested a meeting with the partisan top lads, and we eventually arranged a meeting. I went with Jones. There was General Ceruti with his Sergeant Major, Marechal, I think they called him, and a couple of others, and there were a couple of Yugoslav partisan, I mean, English-speaking. It was a sort of a four-way discussion, you know, I was only the minor bod, I was only an acting staff sergeant, but I was there to assist with interpreting when necessary. And eventually, Ceruti said that he was called General Jacko during the First World War, and he got the MC from us for his Allied efforts and so on, and he was no fascist. He lost his two sons in the aerial combat, and his wife had been bombed and killed, and he was fed up with it and wanted to get back to he wanted to join the partisans, but only if he could have command. And they said, no, you can't do that. If you stay here, you operate under our orders. And he wouldn't accept this. So they arranged for him to take his, all his gear back to to Italy. But apparently on the way, Julius on the way stripped him of almost everything that he got on his lorry. He arrived back with very little, poor old cocker. Anyway.
So this was when Italy collapsed?
Yes, yes.
September 1943.
Now, at the same time...
Whereabouts did that meeting take place?
Oh, God, I can't remember. Not too far from our GHQ. Both sides had agreed to recall all patrols and undertake no military activity at all. And it was honoured on both sides. When it was over, Cerruti shook hands all round, including me, saluted, and off he went, you know, with his party. And of course, the next day... operations were renewed, but finally he had another meeting. I wasn't present at the second meeting, and that was when he was told he could retire to Italy, to Italian forces. Now, in the meantime, as far as I remember rightly, or about that time, Brigadier Fitzroy MacLean, now Sir Fitzroy MacLean, was dropped in to take over command of all missions. He dropped into Tito's headquarters, and as I think is well known, he became very good friends with Tito. In fact, he's got a villa that the grateful Croatians gave him on Corcula. I think his son was married from not so long ago. As I say, although he was no left winger, he's not today, as far as I know. I don't know if he's still an MP, but he was anyway.
He was a Conservative MP.
Yes, but he had a lot of sympathy with their movement, and I thought he was frankly slandered by Michael Lees, I regret to say.
We're talking about a recent
television, yes,
program.
Where he said things.
And
to my surprise, Fitzroy MacLean answered very mildly. I thought he could have given far more effective answers, but he's such a nice fellow, you know. I was amazed that he was so reserved about it.
So, if we can come back to your own story, you'd gone, transferred from Croatia to Slovenia in the summer of 43. You'd been present with those negotiations with
yes.
the Italians in
yes.
September
yes.
of 43.
Yes.
But you'd stayed in Slovenia
till
right
July 1944.
Until July 44.
Yes, yes.
But all the time confined to the HQ?
Well, moving around, waiting, you know, with the patrols at night for planes that very often never came, you know, in the deep snow. I didn't do any fighting, really, not worth talking about. I mean, I heard shots all around me and so on, but I wasn't taking part in it.
How close to you did the Germans come in Slovenia?
Well, they came round the GHQ just below the hill quite often. You know, we could sort of hear them moving around. And when Italy collapsed and they did this takeover, they crossed over the River Cooper, which was the dividing line from the Italian held territory, they chased us for 5 weeks and we went around. We couldn't even light a fire. You know, there are great big dells in Slovenia, very, very deep dells where we used to hide at night. I was with the GHQ party, separated from Jones, and Peter Moore and I were together. And, of course, Jimmy, Eric Davis, he was with us. I've forgotten that, yeah. Well, now, when it was all over, we finally got back to the base, to the GHQ, the wooden huts in the clearing. Of course, I had to go back to retrieve my WT sets and my generator, my things of petrol, and my crystals, and my book, my code book. So I went out with a patrol, and we retraced our steps. Don't ask me where, it was all over the place, you know. I never even knew where we ended up, frankly. And I recovered the sets and the crystals and the book, but the petrol had gone. Some locals had nicked it. To use the vulgarism. And we came to a village, and we were desperately hungry. This was about 4 or 5 days out. And I said, look, we've got to get some food. Now, we came to a village that turned out to be pro-Belegardisti, you know, they were the white guards, because the Slovenians had their questions. They had the Belegardisti and they had the Domobranci, the home guard, all pro-German, pro-Nazi. Now, they wouldn't give us any food. They said, we haven't got any food. I said, look, for God's sake, you've got food. You know, there they are, the people, they're eating bread in there and so on. I said, no, we've got no food. And I was prepared to use my pistol to force them, because we offered to pay, and they refused. And I said, well, I bloody will shoot them. I'm going to get some food. I'm not going to starve. God almighty, they're collaborating with our enemy. I'm entitled to use some force. And, oh, you mustn't do that, Tovarish. Yeah. Tovarish, you can't do that. give us a bad name. And they would not. They told me that Tito had said anybody would pay with his head that was accused, that was found guilty of any atrocities or ill treatment of the civilian populace. This is contrary to what a lot of the pro-Chetnik people say. I had again and again experience of this, where they refused to allow things to take what I would have called a natural course against the enemy. They were most particular about not getting a bad name. Whatever the reason, that was it. Anyway, we pressed on hungry until we got to another village where they weren't so bad and we could buy food. And eventually I recovered my WT set and my crystals and my book, my code book and so on, and got back to base. Now, when we got back to base and linked up with Bell Jones, this is the crucial point. He said because our chaps had not sent any supplies for weeks and weeks and weeks to the partisans, he was going to instruct me to go off the air. And of course, as his subordinate, I had to do that. And after about 2 weeks, Commandant Mattia, the commander of the Syrian GHQ, came and said, Torres Alexander, he said, we love Major Jones, we think the world of him, but we disagree with his policy. We do not want your people to think we are a bunch of what was it they called him? Of immature people, irresponsible people. Please recontact. I said, I can't, though. He's my superior officer.
What specifically did they mean by disagreeing with his policy?
Well, keeping him off the air. He told me to go off the air completely. And they said, look, you must contact them and tell them. Whether we get supplies or not, we must have their belief in us. So I, in cyber medicine, sent them, said, you know, against instructions, the request of Mattia, I was doing this. And of course, when he got back to base, old Jones and saw this, he went berserk. This is when they sent Peter Jones in, Peter Moore in, you see, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Moore, the engineer. Marvellous fellow, Peter Moore. I met him at a reunion that was organised by the Daily Mirror a few years ago, when Sergeant Ripple was still alive. He died since very young, at 51, that chap. Anyway, they took Jones out, and he went to Barry, and went back to Canada, wrote his book, and I've got it next door. A lot of it is what was in the things that I the blue pencil when I sent my dispatches, you know. However, I found him a most peculiar character. He got all the guts in the world. He got the DCM and bar in the First World War. I think he was in the Canadian Black Watch. He lost an eye, which he used to take. He had a glass eye. He used to take it out and polish it, you know, we were talking, which amused me. And he was a teetotaler, a very religious man. He was almost an epitome of that character. Do you remember that film, Cimarron, ran, fought the war with a pistol in one hand and a Bible in the other? Well, that was Major Bill Jones. Oh, perhaps you're too young. Anyway, he was the epitome of that character. And yet he had his own ideas, you see. I think he represented the Canadian Commonwealth Party. And he had a lot of sympathy with the partisans. I mean, to be quite fair to him, there was no doubting his courage, but I would doubt his political sagacity, quite frankly. That may sound harsh of somebody who's died, but that was my reaction to him. He didn't like me at all, so I didn't like him very much, come to that. So, as I say, I got back to Cairo in July 1944. I was commissioned, I went down and got kitted out. I was a full lieutenant by this time, having been 6 months as a second lieutenant. Automatically, I was a full lieutenant. And then I met up with the chap you're going to meet eventually, I hope,